Welcome back. This is Roy with podcast number 11. This is our first podcast of 2019, and we're going to hit a controversial subject, which is nutrition, what we eat. There's a lot of fads out there. There's a lot of information out there on diet, and I think that as athletes, as endurance athletes, sometimes we get on the social medias or we see an article and it hits all our buttons. Like, it hits all those check marks that we believe is correct. And then we grab onto that diet and we adhere to that like the gospel. And I think that's the problem with anything that we do with endurance sports in general, in the sense that when we read an article that long, slow, and steady workouts are the best, or high cadence for cyclists is better, or 80-20 is the best way to train. And I think that nutrition is very similar to that, in the sense that everyone's like, ketogenic diet is the best for everyone, being a vegetarian is the best for everybody. And I think that that's where we end up getting in trouble as athletes. I believe that there are diets out there that need to be implemented at certain times. I believe that certain diets work for certain people but don't work for others. I believe that there's timing, like proper timing of nutrients and proper timing of the diet and the types of diets. So I think that if you have a toolbox that has multiple options in it versus just one tool, then I think that that potentially could be better for athletes and better for general health. So, like, for example, if all you know is the ketogenic diet and that's your only tool, then every athlete that you work with, or all your friends, or anything that you associate with, is going to be about ketogenic, right? So that's, you have blinders on to anything else. And when somebody comes at you with some new evidence or information, you may discount that. And so that becomes an error. And I know early on in my coaching career, I had blinders on. I had it, hey, this is the way it should be, and this is how it should be. And I had one tool. And so I applied that tool to all the athletes that I worked with. And for some, it worked, right? There's a bell curve, you know, of athletes that it worked for. There's some on each side of the spectrum that it didn't work for. And so that's where I erred in the beginning of coaching. And then as I became more open to listening to others, other ideas, other opinions, other philosophies, and then I gathered more tools. So then I started thinking, well, there is a place and time for various diets. There is a place and time for various types of training. So I'm gonna intertwine here training and nutrition, but the overall theme of this is going to be on nutrition, and not necessarily for weight loss. So with what I do as an endurance coach or performance coach is I don't really train for weight loss. Now, if you adhere to a good diet, and performance is tends to be linked to body composition, weight loss is tends to be part of that. And so, you know, for example, you know, if you're 30%, if your body fat's 30%, your performance is going to suffer, right? You're going to maybe have to move a larger mass, whether you're running or biking. Also, your VO2 capacity is diminished with a higher body fat percentage. So as we start to lean out and get to a lower body fat percentage, we're able to move quicker. We have a higher VO2 capacity. So things improve. So they do go hand in hand. And I think one of the error that I see a lot of times is that we try to exercise ourselves into proper nutrition, and that becomes a mistake. We all make it, but if we do a 5-hour ride, that doesn't mean we can go eat a Big Mac, right? It doesn't, you know, or we can suck down a large pizza and stuff like that. But a lot of times that's what a lot of athletes do, is they train to eat. And I think that there's a balance here, that your diet what you eat, what you consume should be the lifestyle that you're living as an endurance athlete. And then being an endurance athlete tends to need to be a lifestyle, because in endurance sports, it is a long-term approach versus, you know, short, quick gains. So let's dive into this and nutrition and some of the philosophies and some of the things that I think I've learned and what has worked for athletes. So some of the diets out there that we see each day, and we've already touched on it, is ketogenic. So ketogenic diet, basically you're bringing your carbohydrates down to a very, very minimal amount, and you're switching your body into ketosis so it burns fat as fuel, and you're making yourself into a fat burner or a more efficient fat burning machine. And so this diet is definitely very effective. There are lots of reasons for people to be on this diet. There are certain medical conditions that make this diet advantageous. There are certain cancers that make this diet that you would want to adhere to. But it is not a one size fit all, because there are some diets out, or excuse me, there are some cancers out there that actually feed off of fat. So I think there's lots of cancers that feed off of carbohydrates or sugars. But there are some now that have been researched to feed off of fat. So you want to make sure that if you're doing this for that specific reason, that you consult someone who is a professional in this area. So an oncologist who knows a lot about nutrition would be your best bet. But there you go. First example of taking one tool and applying it to everybody. In the endurance field, a lot of people are like, well, a ketogenic diet is good for fueling, right? Like I have a lot, fat has, you know, more calories per gram. I get more bang for my buck out of fat. I have some greater fat storage, and the fat is a good fuel source. And that is definitely the case for lower aerobic activity. But as soon as you go anaerobic, as soon as you go over or intensive, then that's where you run into some problems. So is a ketogenic diet good at a certain period of time? And I would say yes. When I see ketogenic diets working, or where I implement those diets, where we bring carbohydrates down to a very low level, is during like an off-season or base or foundation period. Because in that period of training, in that periodization of training, your activity level is at low intensities. And just to kind of explain a little bit without getting too sciencey into this, is that if you look at the two systems, aerobic and anaerobic, all right, I know there's a bunch of different zones, but technically we just have two really systems, as aerobic and anaerobic, aerobic being with oxygen, anaerobic being without. And the aerobic system tends to burn fat. It burns fat as fuel. It also burns carbohydrates. So it's not an all or nothing approach. It does burn fat as fuel, predominantly depending as you get lower down the intensity curve. So if you are riding or running at a lower intensity, like endurance pace or recovery pace, the fuel that you're using predominantly is going to be fat, and then you're going to use some carbohydrates as well, but very little. So it's sparing those carbohydrates, because the body's like, well, this activity is pretty minimal. I'm walking, or I'm running at a low intensity, or I'm riding at a low intensity. We can use fat as our fuel. We don't need to use carbohydrates. And part of that is our evolution. Like carbohydrates, glycogen is stored inside the muscle for quick access, like immediate access, and that would be for us to move quickly, to run fast away from things, to contract a muscle pretty strongly. So then glycogen is being used, and in the absence of glycogen, and in a deprived state, the body can't move that quickly. The body can't get into that anaerobic state. So the body wants to preserve that glycogen stores, so it uses fat. And the ketogenic diet does that to an extreme, right? So it brings you down to very, very minimal carbohydrates, puts you into ketosis. There is an adaptation period where your body changes over into burning fat and becoming more efficient as a fat burner. And that's good for a period of time. But think about this. The glycolytic system, glycolysis, allows us to use carbohydrates for immediate, more efficient energy use or more efficient energy source because it is right inside the muscle. So carbohydrates get stored as a glycogen inside the muscles. And those, when you contract a muscle, when you run quickly, when you actually perform a movement that's contracting those muscles, the energy is there. It's already there. It doesn't have to be converted. So when you're using fat, when fat's into your stream as an energy source, it does have to be converted to be used as fuel. It doesn't get there is an extra step involved, and it is not as efficient. Okay, so yes, you can make your body more efficient at using fat as fuel, but it is not as efficient as using glycogen because glycogen is right inside the muscle, okay? And fat is not stored there as a glycogen source. It has to be broken down into use. That's just the science around it. So aerobic activity, low intensity, that's why they tell you if you want to lose weight, walk briskly for an hour, right? And that's a great way to do it. When you go out there and do training, like if you're in a ketogenic diet, you're trying to lose weight and you're doing a HIIT style training, so intensive training where you're going anaerobic for short periods, you're recovering anaerobic for short periods, back and forth, back and forth, that potentially being on a ketogenic diet may not be the best. Also, it may not be the best to burn fat because the fat burning periods are at that low level of aerobic. Now, people are going to say that that your metabolism is upregulated by these high intensity workouts, and that the metabolism continues to flow and burn during a period of time after those type of workouts. And I would say that's potentially something that happens. Like for example, if I have a fit athlete who's really fit, I'm not, me personally, from my experience dealing with athletes, I'm not going to give them a high intensity training to lose fat. I'm not going to do that. But if I have somebody who is really out of shape, really carb dependent, you know, they've been eating a lot of carbs, I may give them HIIT style training to really fast forward the progress of losing fat and getting into shape. We can gain some low-lying fruit by doing that type of training. So one of the things is when somebody is, you know, really out of shape, really dependent on carbohydrates, then I'm going to hit them maybe with some high-intensity training, change their diet closer to a ketogenic diet, and get a jump start. And this does two things. One, it changes their body composition really fast. It reduces their weight. It builds a quick fitness for them, and it also changes their mindset, right? Because like they're seeing these gains quickly, but eventually that's going to taper out. It's going to plateau, and then we need to change the type of training. We also need to adjust their diet. So this is one way that we can use a diet to mimic or to follow the path of your training. So back to the ketogenic diet. So we talked about aerobic based work. So in the off season, in the foundation, when you're doing long, slow, and steady, when you're doing tempo rides, when you're doing, you know, longer endurance rides, and you're staying away from those upper intensive efforts, going to a ketogenic diet makes a lot of sense because at that point you can you're not reliant as much on carbohydrates. You're not looking to really put in peak performances. You are looking to build a foundation, an aerobic base, and using fat as fuel is a great way of doing that. It's also why ultra-distant runners, ultra-distant athletes tend to go towards or gravitate towards ketogenic diets because there is a lot, there's 8 calories per gram of fat, where in carbohydrates it's 4. So you're basically doubling the amount of calories that you're getting per gram. So it's definitely a energy source that's rich in calories, and the body can use that for long endurance events. And in these long endurance events, fat as fuel becomes something that becomes important, right? Because if I'm running for 24 hours, if I'm running 100 miles, that is that is probably the extreme of endurance, right? That's the extreme. We're running at endurance the entire time, running and walking. Very seldom are you going to be running at threshold or in anaerobic states. If you are, you're going to, you know, that 100 miles is not going to turn out well for you. So keep in mind that that's why you hear ultra distances, Ironman athletes, so forth and so on, using the ketogenic diet. Now, does that work for everyone? No. I think that there's a range for that. You know, can you be a little bit more on that keto side? Can you be on that keto side where you're not doing less than 10%, but maybe you're doing 20% or 30% carbohydrates? And that's where you need to work on your diet. So I like to use a periodization approach with the diet. So in the off season, ketogenic diet makes sense. And again, for those who are not familiar, this is where you're bringing your carbohydrates below 10%, really, really restrictive. Some people are on like on 40 or 50 grams of carbohydrates, very minor amount of carbohydrates consumed, turning your body into a fat burning machine. And I think that for appearance and body composition, ketogenic diets work great. It dehydrates you in the beginning because you're flushing all the carbohydrates out of your body. So you have to be careful with dehydration. It does lean you out because it shrinks. When you suck out all the glycogen out of your muscles, you bring that down to a very minimal state. One, you're losing a lot of water weight in the beginning. You're losing that glycogen inside the muscle, so it's shuttling it out. And so in the beginning, you're going to lose a ton of weight really quickly. And then you are going to start to burn some fat in those ketogenic diets. Now, if I'm a sedentary person, I don't work out, right? I'm the person who thinks I'm just going to do it based on diet alone. If you don't work out, sure, ketogenic diets make a lot of sense because you're not exercising. You're not needing those calories. You're not needing those carbohydrates to support activity. So again, right there is a reason to match the ketogenic diet to the activity level that you're doing. And for endurance athletes during the base period, that is a good time. Now, for endurance athletes, as they come out of the base period, and the base period for most athletes can last from 12 weeks up to 24 weeks, depending on how you set your base period or your foundational training. And then you move into the build period. This is where you start to add in some intensity. Maybe you start to do harder tempo efforts. You start to get closer to threshold, and you start to use more glycogen during your workouts. So as the intensity goes up, you get closer to threshold, you get closer to anaerobic activity. Now, glycogen needs to be introduced. And I've seen great success with this by changing into a diet that is paleo-ish. So a paleo diet would work really well. I like to use a well-balanced diet. What I mean is that your traditional diet where you're doing protein, carbs, and fat, and the carbohydrates, the percentage kind of changes based on the activity level of the day. So paleo is a style, I would say, of eating. A diet where you're eating cleaner foods, but it is not a carb restrictive diet. So that's, I think, a lot of times people get confused with ketogenic and paleo. Paleo, you're taking in carbs. They are just cleaner foods, organic. I'm trying to get closer to the earth versus processed foods. You got vegetarians, and vegetarians to go keto as a vegetarian is definitely a tough task to do because you are having to eat a high fat diet, low carbs, high protein, typically a vegetarian diet has some carbohydrates in there, and more so than so being a ketogenic vegetarian, I haven't run across any of those. Definitely something that I can't really speak of because I haven't run across. Now, I've had some vegetarian athletes. I've had some paleo athletes. I have had some keto athletes, athletes who just eat seafood, athletes who do the well-balanced diet. So, and I'm going to speak to these because that's my experience. I won't speak to things that I'm not experienced in. So as we come out of that foundation period, we walk into the building periods. In the building periods, this is the time when we start to see we'll start to add in those intensities at threshold. So it's 100% of all out. We'll start to add in those periods of max aerobic. Max aerobic for me is those periods of 3 to 6 minutes. So VO2 type efforts. You are getting anaerobic in those. But they're not the short like Tabata, like 20-second intervals, 1-minute intervals. These are still longer sustained. So you might be riding or running or exercising at 100%, 90% of capacity of your threshold. So it is a little bit more as you get into the build phase. And when you hit the build phase of training, this is where I start to switch to that carbohydrate type of fueling. And I think this is a good time to do it because you've turned your body in the off season to a ketogenic, so you're burning fat really efficiently. And one downside of that is when you make the body efficient in one area, it becomes deficient in another. So now it's not going to burn carbohydrates, you know, as efficient as maybe it was before. So when you switch over from the ketogenic diet to a diet that has some carbohydrates, right away people tend to gain a little bit of weight. Some people lose weight, actually. Some people lose weight because the body is in a stressed mode. And when it's in a stressed mode, cortisol levels could be high. And so when you introduce these carbohydrates, you knock yourself out of that stress mode and you lose weight, actually. But a lot of people will gain weight. And so this is where it's individualized for the person. And so let's say you introduce it and you start gaining some weight. Well, know that this weight gain in the beginning, in the 7 to 14 days of introducing carbohydrates back into your system, is a period where you're shuttling carbohydrates into your muscles and into and water, and you're rehydrating yourself because you're starting to shuttle that fluid into the muscles. So an extreme of this is bodybuilders. So bodybuilders will carb deplete themselves for a period of time. They'll go to zero carbs. They'll shrink up because the carbohydrates or the glycogen is being depleted. They are dehydrating themselves. And then when bodybuilders go to get ready for a competition, so a period of time before that, they will reintroduce carbohydrates into the system and they will cut their sodium down very, very little to like almost nothing and drink water. So what this does is now it super compensates and the glycogen shuttles straight back into the muscles, and you'll see the muscles just grow really big. But then there will be very little fluid outside the muscle, so it makes that muscle stand out and pop. And that's that sharp, defined look that you get when you see bodybuilders or people in magazines. Now, that typically only lasts for about 24 to 48 hours. And then after that, when they introduce some salts back into their diet and they start eating normal, they bloat. You get the bloat and they look like puffy. So again, these are the extremes in your body. That's the regulation of the body. That's how it adapts. That's how it's, you know, the body is made. It's very smart. It's insane how smart the body is. So you went from a ketogenic diet. You're doing that in the off season. You suck down. You lose some weight. Boom, you start to add carbs back into the mix. You tend to either – you'll gain some weight. But again, we want to upregulate that glycolytic system. We want to start to use that system because we're going to start to prepare it for harder work and more intensive work. Now we're going through our build seasons, and a lot of times that's about 12 weeks. We build from 12 to 16 weeks into an event. And then as we get into the event, we may want to sharpen. And in that sharpen period, you may use an approach that is kind of dialed in. Like I dial the nutritional approach with athletes based on them. Some of those athletes need intermittent fasting. Some of those need to have a few days of ketogenic and then a few days of carb use. So we mix it. And one of the things that I like to do during that period of time when they're sharpening, when they're at peak performance, is I like to have the days where they're off, they're not training, have those to be a little bit lower in the carbohydrate, not necessarily following the ketogenic diet, but definitely lower, hedging towards the ketogenic diet. And then when they have 1 or 2 hour training days, we start to add a little bit more carbohydrate, so maybe in the 20% range of their caloric intake. And then when they get to a big training day, fueling in and around that training day. So for example, if they have a 5 hour ride, getting up in the morning, fueling pre for that ride, fueling during the ride, recovering, and then back on maybe a little bit less carbohydrate. So we're fueling carbohydrates around the actual activity itself. How does that differ from the build phase? Well, in the build phase, I want to make sure that the body, because I'm giving it lots of workouts, like I'm giving it intensity, repeated efforts of intensity. The loads during a build period are strenuous. There is stresses being added to the body. So I don't want the body to get into like a bad state because I'm depriving it of carbohydrates. I don't want to starve the body because then the performance will start to lack. So an example of this is I had an athlete that he was on a normal carbohydrate diet. We'll consider a normal carbohydrate diet as 40 to 50% of their carbohydrates of their diet is carbohydrates. And they were at time trials. There were three of them, which means that they rode their bike as hard as they could for periods of time. They had power meters, so we're able to measure and quantify their strength on the bike. And I gave them this workout. It's a max aerobic workout, 3 times 5 minutes. Or excuse me, 5 times 3 minutes. So it's an anaerobic workout. You're riding over a threshold, 130 to 50%. So you're really pushing it and you're recovering. So I'd have them do this workout. And when they had carbs in their system, they would hit the numbers or exceed those numbers. They wanted to go to the ketogenic diet. I said, let's give it a shot. I'm willing to try it and see how it worked for them. So we backed off their carbs systematically. So they started at 40, 50, we brought it down to 30, we brought it down to 20. And when we got to, it may have been even 20, but when we got below 20, there was a clear, defined moment of performance drop-off. Their performance suffered so badly that one athlete could only complete 2 of the 5 3-minute efforts, where before they were banging out the 3 and exceeding the power. Now they could only do 2 and they barely could make it home because they exhausted. So they depleted the carbohydrate, the glycogen levels. They went out there and tried to ride as hard as they can for 3 minutes. They exhausted the little bit of carbohydrates that they had in their system, and then they become dizzy and weak. And because they don't have the ability to go anaerobic, and they're trying to do it, they're willing themselves to do it. And so, I don't think it's an arguable. It shouldn't be a debate of argument because it's clear science. Like we have an aerobic system and an anaerobic system. One uses carbs, one doesn't. And if you don't have the carbs to use, you can't get into that system efficiently or effectively. Okay, so that athlete did that. We did it a couple times. He failed. I did it with some other athletes. They all failed. So then we put them back on carbohydrate diets, slowly introducing carbs again. And at about 30, 35%, the performance started to go back up again. And so it was clear to us, it was clear to them, it was clear to us that ketogenic diet during that period of phase of training is not the way to go. And then that's where you become a practitioner, right? I listen to a lot of people, I read a lot of articles, and they're not practitioners. Like I work with athletes every day. I read, I listen to articles, I listen to podcasts, and I listen to the latest and greatest. And I think that when you have somebody who is hyper-focused on and they have blinders on and they say ketogenic diet only, they're looking at it through their logic, their circle of people. And maybe their circle of people are all ketogenic people. Or if these are people who are sedentary, who don't exercise, or people who are obese, or people who have extreme health conditions like cancer, I look at it from a performance perspective. Can I get performance out of the food we eat? I want to keep everybody healthy. But I want, for the most part, I'm not dealing with people who are dying of cancer. If I was, then I would be, one, an oncologist, and two, I'd have a greater I wouldn't have blinders on, but I would definitely be focused on how does diets affect cancer. I don't. I look at how diets affect performance. That's the only thing I focus on, is performance and a well balance. Like, I don't want some, if they said that ketogenic diets were the greatest performance enhancer, but it caused harm to people, then I wouldn't do it. I want the balance of health, wellness, balance, and performance. And so when I work with athletes, that's my main focus, is when I look at numbers and I quantify it. I don't ask how they felt. I do ask how they felt, but a lot of times how they felt does not line up with the actual markers, the numbers. So I have key performance indicators or markers that I look for. So if, for example, we're in the build phase and we're trying to raise this person's strength on the bike, which is their threshold, I look at threshold as the key biomarker. I look at a couple other things like heart rate, and then they give me how they felt. And a lot of times people will be on this ketogenic diet and I said, how'd you feel? They said, I felt good. But then I look and their threshold's gone down 30 watts. And some other markers that I look at are on the decline. So they may feel good, their perception is good, their perceived effort is, you know, one that they believe that they're pushing this effort out. But in all actuality, their performance is declining. That's why technology is great. That's why you want to have an objective way of measuring it, because a lot of times our perceptions of what's going on is a lot different than actually what's going on. Then I take those numbers and I show it to the athlete and I say, hey, look, and these three athletes who had this decline in power, you know, besides them bonking, but before that, I saw the decline. It was a steady decline. And when they got to, that breaking point, that's when they just bonked completely. So again, we like to use technology and numbers to quantify it, but then we do ask them how they're feeling. So during those load periods of building, that is the time where, you know, a paleo diet, a diet of, you know, of carb rich, around 40%, 40-50% of their diets, and typically on a daily basis. Even on their days off, if they're a lean athlete, which they should be, like if you did your homework in the foundation period, right, and you did 12, 20, 24 weeks, 30 weeks of foundation-based training, you did a keto type of diet, you improved your body composition, you lost some fat, and now you're coming into the season lean, you know, or close to a quote-unquote race weight, then when we introduce carbohydrates, it's not that big a deal. But what a lot of people do is in the off season, they don't. They actually eat more. They eat, their diets are worse. They're doing the carb diet during aerobic base period when they should actually be doing a ketogenic type of diet during that base period. Then when they transition to the build period where we're actually going to give them harder workouts, repeatable workouts, they go to make the change to carbohydrates, but they're not happy because their body composition is not going in the direction. But if they came into the build season with that body composition already set, primed, ready to go, it's a little easier mindset transition. So going into that build period, what we want to do is at that time, we go into a carb diet. We go into more of a well-balanced diet, typically 40 to 50% of carbohydrates for the calories of that day. And then we do protein and fat. So protein, how I typically do it, I'm usually at 0.7 to 1 gram of protein per pound of body weight. So if I weighed 150 pounds and I want to do 1 gram per pound of body weight, it's 150 grams of protein. Now that's going to vary. It's going to vary from athlete to athlete. It's going to vary on age. Believe it or not, as we get older, we need a little more protein. Our body doesn't synthesize or use protein more as efficiently. If I'm a vegetarian, some of those proteins do not absorb as well as meat proteins. I had somebody argue this with me, and I'm like, it's science. It's a BV rating. It's a biological rating. It's based on a science-based approach. There are 9 essential amino acids. You know, if a protein doesn't have it, you have to mix it to get it. Now, I guess you could argue that you don't need those proteins, and that could be an argument that you could make, but I'm just saying that Typically, when you are eating lower BV rating, biological value, or absorbable proteins, you need a little bit more. So you may want to hedge towards that 1, maybe 1.2. If you are a younger athlete, you know, 20, 25, 30, then you could eat a little bit less protein and be close to that 0.7, 0.8. Now, this is for endurance athletes. Bodybuilders would have a different requirement. During this period of time, you want 50%, 40%, kind of playing with that in the build period of carbohydrates. Then you have your protein, and then I just let fat happen. Fat typically finds its way to the correct number. The only time we have those issues is if you are a vegetarian. Sometimes the fat component is a little bit lower unless you are supplementing with oils, avocados, MCT oils, things like that. So we want to make sure people who eat seafood tend to be on that lower fat position. So we want to make sure that you are getting in those fats, and nuts would be a good way to do that. Avocados, fatty foods, MCT oils, and adding that fat component in there. But it typically happens, and you're like, well, coach, how do I figure this out? Well, track it. You got to track it, right? You can't just go, well, I'm going to guess. So what I would do is I would download MyFitnessPal and track your foods and track it during the off season. Get down to that ketogenic, you know, under 10% carbs. Then when you're getting into that build period, reset your carbohydrate allowances to be, start at 40%, right? Start at 40. You can start at 30. I'm saying 40 to 50 is a good carbohydrate during the build phase, because you are doing some workloads that are going to require those glycogen stores to be topped off. And then typically people will do 12 to 16 weeks, and then they'll go into a peak period, or a period where the body is peaking. So it doesn't matter if you're not racing or not. I think that everybody should follow this cycle, the cyclical periodization of training, whether you're just doing it for fitness or fun or events or beating your buddies in the group ride. I believe that you should follow this type of approach, because our bodies follow a rhythm throughout the year. There are periods when we want to ride long, slow, and steady. There are periods when we want to push strength. And then there's a period we want to do high-intensity training. And this is where that HIIT-style training, that Tabata-style training works. So after about 12 weeks of foundation or building, then I go 6 weeks, 8 weeks max of high-intensity work. This is where we will do Tabata stuff, which is 20 seconds on, 40 seconds off. This is where we do one-minute repeats. This is where we're doing, those who are familiar with functional reserve capacity, FRC work. This is where we're doing sprints and high, hard, fast efforts. And really, if you're motor pacing, if you're in the motor pacing during that peak period, tends to be where we're going to be motor pacing at speed to build up that speed. And in this period is where I really start to dance with the diets. I work in and out of the diets based on the athlete. I get a little cute. So in the foundation and the build, I don't get cute. I go straight at it, and then in the peak period, or that 6 to 8 period after you do your, I get cute with going on the days off where I'm not doing any activity, I go ketogenic. I do intermittent fasting, where I try to fast for 12 to 14 hours and I'm eating all my food within 8 to 10 hours. And then I get a little cute with the days where I'm doing 1 or 2 hours, I may only do 10 to 20% carbs. And the days I go 3 to 4 hours, I'll do 30 to 40% carbs. So I get really creative with that based on the athlete, and you can test that. So like this period of time, you're putting high load, like high intensities, but you're only doing 1 or 2 of those workouts per week because they're really intensive and they shock the body. Where in the build phase, you might be doing 3 like threshold type workouts, and you're still doing some endurance work. So you're not shocking the body as much, but you are definitely shocking it. But when you get to that peak phase, you're really kind of like fine tuning it. And so I want to get on that razor's edge. And this is where maybe we use ketogenic diet for the days you're off, and bring your carbs down to a very minimal amount, or we do intermittent fasting. The days you have 1 or 2 hour workouts, then you are doing maybe 20, 30% carbs. And then when you're doing longer workouts, 30 to 40% carbs. I always keep the protein the same, same philosophy with proteins and fat. I don't really mess with those too much. Carbs are where we really dance around. And then the quality of protein. I mean, paleo tends to be a diet that I kind of hedge towards. Paleo is something that I believe is something that is a little cleaner. But keep in mind, remember, paleo and ketogenic or Atkins type diets are very different. One's a higher fat, high protein. One is more of a well balanced in that paleo diet. And I think people miss that. So just to recap, off season, base training, whether you're an athlete or just doing it, you should have a base period where you're doing lower intensities. You're doing that for 12, 16, 18, 20 weeks, low intensity training. You're doing that day in and day out. There may be some strength training involved in there. You're doing a ketogenic diet. Boom. You do that for a period of time. You strip away. You make your body really a fat-burning machine. Then when you go to the build period, you're going to have 12 weeks of building where you're doing hard 90%, 100%, maybe 105% of your threshold capacity. So if you're a runner, you're going to be running a lot at 90 to 105% of threshold capacity. You're going to be doing that middle level type of workout. So you got the aerobic, which is on the left side. Right in the middle is where that building starts to happen. In that build period is when I start to introduce the carbohydrates. You know, I say 40-50. I guess you could do 30-50% of carbohydrates. We talked about the protein, and I don't cycle it. I just really keep it steady because my body is working really hard. Because even though we are doing a build, we're also still doing some longer rides because we want to keep that aerobic engine tuned. Then that usually lasts 12 weeks. So if you did 24 weeks of foundation, then you did 12 weeks of building, that's 36 weeks right there that you're in the middle of a program. And that's 36, so that's what, 9 months. And then you're going to do 6 to 8 weeks of peak performance. And that's where you're going to hit that high intensity Tabata type training, really pushing hard, demanding your body to peak perform. And so this could be track days, this could be sprint efforts, and this is where I carb cycle. This is where I use carb cycling, where I do zero carbs, and then I do lower carbs on days where I'm not training as much and higher carbs when I'm training more volume. So, and that's just one way of doing it. And inside of this overarching plan with athletes, we may test out things. So we may test out when we're in the build phase, and there may be, maybe we pick one day a week where they carb fast, right? Because that's, it works for them. Or maybe we, maybe the carb diet doesn't work for them. So we keep them at 30% versus 40%. This is one I really do quite often, is I have somebody test how long they can go unfueled. So for example, the other day I did this, I trained for an hour indoors hard. I didn't eat anything. Got up, had water, trained indoors hard for a hour. Filled my bottle with an electrolyte drink, and then I rode 3 more hours outside. So I did 4 hours, about 80 miles. After 3 hours, so one indoor, 2 outdoor, after 3 hours of training, and the 1 hour indoor was pretty intensive, which I burned through all the glycogen that I had because it was an hour at about 90%. Then I rode 2 hours of about endurance pace. I was bonking. I started to feel it. I felt hypoglycemic. I needed those sugars. So I grabbed a candy bar. I ate that and I drank some a juice to get those sugars in. Probably took in about 300 calories. Then I finished the ride. So I did the entire ride on 300 calories. I wanted to see where my body was at. And as endurance athletes, I think this is probably something that, I don't know, so it might be news to some people, but in the beginning, we need more carbohydrates. So if I'm a new endurance athlete, I need to take in more carbohydrate, or excuse me, calories. I need to take in more calories. Our body's not as efficient. The cells, our mitochondria aren't as strong. We're not as efficient. What's going on inside our body needs more calories. So maybe we needed 400 calories an hour before, right? And those 400 calories an hour kept us fueled, but also kept our body composition where we wanted it. As your body gets more efficient, as you get older into the endurance environment, because you're on your fifth year, you don't need as many calories. You may only need 200 calories or you need 400. But a lot of people don't change their diet. They keep it the same because that's what they always did and that's what they know. And all of a sudden, they're putting on weight. You ever, as you get into the endurance and become more efficient, it's not necessarily ketogenic, paleo, carbs, blah, blah, blah. It is my body's more efficient now. It burns. It doesn't need as many calories. So now I reduce those calories to a minimal level. And that's important because when you're an ultra athlete doing Ironman or something of that nature, in the beginning, you do need a lot of calories. But as you start to develop efficiencies, as your aerobic engine gets bigger and stronger, you don't need as much, which is why I always said to an endurance athlete to build one takes 3 to 5 years because there's a lot of issues with their stomachs and trying to consume 400, 500 calories. Your stomach gets bloated. You can't do that because you're exercising. There's lots of fatigue going on. So I think it takes a while to build that athlete up and to build those efficiencies. So that's one thing to keep in mind as you become a more of efficient athlete. Do some carb-restricted or calorie-restricted rides. See where you bonk. See how efficient your body has become. It's something I do. I also want to test my mind on that too. So it's a mental thing as well. Supplements. I would say that I don't mess with supplements until I have this process down. And this process could take over a year because you see, we are mixing diets based on the time of the year. So we're mixing diets based on the time of the year. Also, you notice how we're mixing the style of training. In the base period, we're doing an 80-20, or we're basically doing lots of low aerobic with a little bit of intensity. Then we're moving into more periodization where we're doing threshold type work. And then we're moving to Tabata and HIIT style training. So we're using all of the methods out there, and we're also intertwining that with the different diets that are out there. And I think that's a better approach because I think trying to do one size fits all or the same diet all year, our bodies are always changing and adapting, and we want to adapt with that. And you'll notice a rhythm. Think about this, and there are periods of time in the year where you will just want to ride or run slow and steady. There are periods of time when you're tired of doing that and you want to go faster, and there are periods of time when you want to do track days. This is why most programs don't work, because what they're doing is you're doing a track day every week. You're doing tempo work every week. You're doing interval work every week. You're doing high intensity training every week. So you're doing that 52 weeks out of the year, or you're expected to. But I think that the body is changing, and the body will ask for what it wants. So maybe it does want a period of carb restriction. Maybe it does want a period of carbs and so forth and so on. So this is how I've seen it work really well for the athletes. And I think the simple way to do it is test it out. You know, go through 12, 16 weeks low intensity base building training. Try ketogenic diet while you're doing that. I think trying the ketogenic diet while you're building will be a failure. You'll get frustrated and you'll fall off the wagon. Then going into the building period where you're putting a little bit higher intensity work in, go to more of a well-balanced paleo type of diet. And then when you get to the high intensity, you can get a little cute with it, doing some intermittent fasting, doing some carb cycling type of work. And there you got three different diets, three different periods of time. And I think that sets things up for success. Don't get caught into, hey, ultra runners do this, or track cyclists do this. Figure out what works for you. Test it. You know, I'm not going to tell someone that being a vegetarian doesn't work. It works. It works very well if it's done properly. But I think you should cycle that diet too in how you give those macronutrients to your body. You follow the same pattern, in my opinion, and it works really, really well. Now, there's always those people outside the bell curves that this does not work for. And that's where working with someone comes into play, because we're tracking, monitoring the data, and then we're going back, and just like I did with those athletes. So I speak from a position of doing this, putting it into practice versus like theory versus a book versus this works for me. Like, what works for me is definitely not what I outlined today. What works for me is totally different than what I outlined, but this is a approach that I've developed that works for a lot of people, and then we modify that based on the athlete. All right. I know that's a lot of information. I know it's a controversial topic. I don't want to say that one person's wrong, right? I'm never going to say one diet's wrong or right. I do believe that there are certain diets or certain fueling based on the demand of the event and the individual that is right for them. And you have to find that prescription. It's easy to take one tool and apply it to everyone. It's hard to individualize their training and their nutrition for performance. That's all we have. I hope you enjoyed our podcast number 11. And if you have any questions, hit me up on Instagram, Facebook. Check out our webpage at aeroprocoaching.com. And if you want to check out one of our programs, go ahead and do so. We have 8-week programs that follow along the lines of the training we talked about here today. We offer custom training as well. If you don't need training, fine. Just follow along. Take advantage of our free tips, the tips that we give that work for our athletes, and definitely provide results. We provide it on Instagram, Facebook, all free to you. You just have to do a little bit of the work to research it. And that's all I have today from Aero Pro Coaching. Up your watts.